This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, you always know what we're talking about. We're talking about the Lotus Effect, and this happens to be episode 210, provisionally titled Taste the Toast. I don't know where that came from, but I know that it was something that fell out of our gobs, and it became a show title. So welcome to episode 210 of The Lotus Effect. And as you know, this show is made up. The content does not matter. And I am Phoenix.
I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, if you don't leave me alone, you're gonna have to send me home. 'Cause I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
Well, I could have taken a smoke break during that whole clip that you just played.
Please tell me I didn't say all of that out loud.
Yeah, I did say all of it out loud. I'm Phone Boy.
Yeah, and you have about as many fucks as I do about saying things out loud.
We do that all the time, in fact.
So if you're not offended yet, well, welcome to our shit show. The people who are listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are getting us.
Or listening to Lotus Effect Live. That's where you actually should be listening. That's only when we're live. The rest of the time, you're just going to hear music. So
either way, it's going to be a great goddamn time. And it might even cause you, God forbid, to freak out.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
There. I just had an orgasm. The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, you might be freaking out because you may never have heard this shit show before, and you might be thinking, oh my God, what the hell is in my ears? Well, lucky you, because we know the Lotus affects everyone differently. And however and wherever the Lotus is affecting you today, we, of course, want to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, we say it every week. We put a lot of time into putting together this wonderful gaggle of bullshit that we put in front of a microphone for you all. And we do operate on the value-for-value model, which consists of the three T's, time, talent, and treasure. We don't focus as much on the treasure, but if you're interested in sending us some, you can go to lotuseffect.show and click on the green We Like Money button. Send us some of your fiat fun coupons. You can also use Cash App with the cash tag $ the Lotus Effect 33. Check out our merch store, lotuseffect.shop. We have smeared our brand feces all over some wonderful merchandise, and we would love it if you would go and get some, show the world that you are a degenerate like the rest of us. You are a pedal head. You can also make a one-time or recurring donation there, but most people don't, and that's okay. Now, we don't exactly have anyone who gave us any monetary value this week, but I want to thank everyone who joined us last night for Rideshare Radio. which ended up not really being rideshare because I was home fucking off.
Yeah.
Well, still recuperating from the holy holiday.
Yeah, exactly. No, we did, but no, we've yeah, and of course New Year's Eve too, right? We did our New Year, you know,
we did the Rockin' New Year's Eve Lotus Bash. That's right, and we had a huge game of Cards Against Humanity. It was amazing. Now, of course, we do understand that you may not have the scratch to send us your cash, but we do know that you can do something much more valuable, which is let us know you're listening. Send the ACK back. It only takes a minute or two, and there's a few ways that you can do it. You can subscribe to our podcast in your favorite app, find, follow, rate, and review us. Now you can find us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any podcast app where you can add an RSS feed. You can find us. One of the major ways people reach out to us is on the massive dong.
Mastodon!
That's right, another piece of shitty social media. That would be Massive Dong, or Mastodon, as they call it. You can reach my partner at phoneboy@lotuseffect.social. You can reach out to me at Phoenix, Phoenix, @lotuseffect.social. You can also email either one of us, phoneboy@lotuseffect.show, Phoenix@lotuseffect.show, or that special email we have set up for you fine fuckers, idontgiveafuck@lotuseffect.show. You can also send us snail mail, keep the uniformed member of the federal government employed just another week. If you want to send us something physical, we love sending and receiving physical stuff, so feel free to do so. One of the huge things, we say every week, we're going to keep saying it, join us in the chat sometime. Like I said, we did Rideshare Radio last night. Every other week, we do 2.5 bends. That starts at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fridays. And we, of course, do this shit show anywhere between 4 and 4:20 or whenever we get on the microphone and decide to start, which is the Lotus Effect. And then, of course, there's Studio 33 that follows right after. And if you're lucky enough, if you're one of the deep degenerates, you can join us for Lotus After Dark, which usually happens after 10 p.m. But all the fun, including Lotus Effect, starts Saturdays at 5 Eastern, 4 Central. And details how to get in on it is at lotuseffect.live. Now, the other way you can send us feedback in a couple of different ways is you can call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line is boozier than Phoenix was on New Year's Eve because it's run by Google Voice. And it's going to answer and mangle your transcript, and there's probably going to be a show title that comes out of it. That's usually what happens. Now, in addition to calling 253-237-3321 to give us your feedback, you can also answer our weigh-in question for the week, which this week we want to know your favorite winter activity. So what do you like to do in the wintertime exclusively? Which means that drinking is not an option, Bemroses, because that's a year-round event. Matter of fact, for you, that's an Olympic event. We love you guys. However, we do want to know what your favorite fall activity is. So call 253-237-3321. Now, the other thing we want to do is next week, we want to know what your favorite snowman story is. So tell us about the time you built a snowman. Was it funny? Was it disastrous? Whatever it was, tell us about it. But for this week, you can call in and tell us your favorite winter activity. So now that we've explained ourselves pretty thoroughly, I think it's time to take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Yeah, but we ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
Yeah, we're not taking
shit. Be respectful. Don't be anti-Semitic. Don't be racist. That's my job. Just be respectful. Don't be hateful to each other. Seriously. I mean, we break balls, but at the end of the day, it's about respect and it's not about shitting on other people because we're trying to propagate
we're trying to make the world a better place making it better in the place that we're in.
Yeah, and we're trying to do it through sarcasm and shit talking, and it's working pretty good so far, I think.
I'd say so. And you know, we have a real famous person here wishing us well.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah,
counting on us not to fuck it up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, antiseptic. Yeah, that too. Okay, speaking of antiseptic, let's talk about health, which and this show will never ever be
brought to you by Pfizer.
No, And I'm sure Pfizer's not happy with this either, because ultra-processed food makers respond to Maha's amid record lobbying effort.
Oh, you don't have no authority over me, bitch.
Oh, yes. For much of the past year, America's largest food manufacturers haven't been able to rebut Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s repeated claims that ultra-processed foods are making Americans sick, something that most Americans believe. Well, yeah, all you have to do is look around America, right? Instead of even trying to pretend their products are even the slightest bit healthy, the industry appears to have settled on a narrower counter-argument. Yes, the food may be bad for you, but it's cheap! And in an era where grocery bills have become a political liability and who cares about the long-term drag on the healthcare system, that may be defense enough.
Well, I was actually going to ask that question because, yeah, it's cheap to purchase, but how expensive is it when it comes to your health, the hospital bills, the doctor bills, and whatever other things that you're going to have to be on and in the system for because of this garbage food that's cheap? You know what else is cheap? One-ingredient foods, folks. I am positive that I could buy a satiating meal that is not nearly as garbage as this shit that they're stuffing into your gobs. Campbell's Soup, we're looking at you too. Yeah, try me, America. I can show you how to eat healthy and not break your budget.
Yeah, well, now food companies are making the case as they seek to blunt a growing wave of state-level efforts to regulate ingredients commonly found in ultra-processed products. Those efforts, encouraged by Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA movement, range from restrictions on synthetic dyes to warning labels for chemical additives. Industry executives and lobbyists argue that such measures taken state by state will drive up costs for consumers already struggling with inflation. Yeah, they're making the financial argument.
I think that's a big fat stack of bullshit.
Yeah. The dynamic here is affordability, Sam Geldug, a managing partner at the Republican lobbying firm CGCN, which represents Kraft Heinz, told Politico. You have a MAHA movement that would like to accomplish one goal, and then you have an inflation economic affordability issue on the other side that runs counter. Well, maybe maybe what would be better is if those products went out of went away. The argument has been sharpened for political effect, and in late October, major food companies and trade groups, including Kraft Heinz, Nestle, and PepsiCo, yeah, there's the four horsemen of the apocalypse right there, they launched a coalition called Americans for Ingredient Transparency. That's one of these bullshit groups that they've done like forever, like the Energy Balance Alliance or whatever it was that Coca-Cola created. It's one of these things that just sounds great, but you know it's full of industry bullshit. These people are dumb. Yeah, the group has begun a six-figure advertising campaign warning that patchwork of state regulations would raise grocery prices and is urging Congress to establish a single federal standard that would override state rules.
These people are sick.
Businesses have long preferred federal preemption when faced with divergent state requirements, and the food industry is no exception. What is new is the framing. The coalition's message is calibrated to appeal to Republican lawmakers uneasy about rising costs and skeptical of regulations that might be blamed for them. President Trump is cutting costs and delivering real relief for working families, Annie Koenig, a senior advisor to the coalition and a former Trump administration official, he said in a statement. But these well-intentioned state bills are creating a patchwork of labeling regulations that could undermine its goal to lower costs for Americans. You know what would lower costs for Americans?
No, it's going to fucking cut into your bottom line, you cunt.
No, you're not going to change how you print the products. You're going to print all the same information available, and that just makes it available to more people. That doesn't seem like a bad thing to me. Oh, unless you're one of these companies that doesn't want that information out on people's food, just showing them you probably shouldn't eat this shit. Anyway, so the industry's push comes amid record lobbying spending in Washington. Now, what else is new? Trade groups and major manufacturers have poured millions into K Street as the Trump administration, more insular and more openly skeptical of corporate influence than in its first term, has proven harder to access. Polling commissioned by the industry underscores why affordability has become its chosen refrain. A recent Politico survey found that nearly half of Americans now consider grocery prices the most challenging household expense, outranking housing and healthcare. Yet the industry's economic argument runs alongside another political reality. Polls also show broad agreement with Mr. Kennedy's view that ultra-processed foods are damaging public health, particularly for children. In October, a survey by KFF and the Washington Post found that large majorities of Americans see highly processed foods as a major health threat. Yes, they are. Kennedy has leaned into that sentiment, often naming familiar brands, which we'll hear about in the next story. As his confirmation hearing, he contrasted the ingredients list of American products with their counterparts abroad. If you buy McDonald's French fries in our country, there's 11 ingredients, he said. If you buy Fruit Loops in our country, they're loaded with food dyes, yellow dye, red dye, blue dye. At the federal level, Kennedy's pursuing a rule change that would require additional scrutiny when food companies alter recipes or introduce new ingredients. At the same time, he's encouraged states, including Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma, to move ahead on their own. Legislatures across the country have responded. More than 100 bills targeting sugar, synthetic dyes, and chemical additives have been introduced this year, nearly five times as many as last year, according to a Politico analysis. A federal standard favors large multinational companies with a lot of money to lobby for less restrictive standards, said Jennifer Gherardi, a senior policy and analyst at the Heritage Foundation, who focuses on MAHA-aligned issues. We see a state-by-state approach as emulating the checks and balances that our federalist system was designed to produce. Yeah, remember, folks, we're a representational republic. We're not a fucking democracy.
And that's what made me laugh when I had an instructor that actually told me, you know, you know what it was? Do you remember that one that I had? You remember the xenophobia question?
Yes.
Remember that class?
Yes.
Same instructor talking about how, you know, that we're a democracy. And I'm like, wow, what an uneducated twat.
Yes, exactly. Now, the industry's most persuasive response to being accused of poisoning Americans is not a denial. It's a reminder that the poison, at least, is cheap, you know, which, you know, of course, it's all about money. Right?
And that's the sad part, because that's exactly how they're hooking you. I'm not even kidding. I'm so going to start this channel and show people how to cook healthy meals with flavor, without the sugar, without the grains, without the seed oils, without all the shit that is attacking your body. I do not understand why sugar has to be in every single product that is made. It is disgusting, it is sad, and it is killing millions of people every year. The misnomers out there about how, well, artificial sweeteners, I mean, you hear us bitching about artificial sweeteners all the time. And yes, we say if you're going to have sugar, have real sugar as opposed to the artificial. But if you're trying not to fucking die, yeah, no sugar at all is probably an even better maneuver, because we know sugar lights up cancer. Alcohol causes cancer. There's a lot of things. And I know it sounds all doom and gloom and this and that, but we are living proof. You do not have to die from these death-dealing diseases because you choose to eat the crap food. Yeah. I'm going to show people how you can afford what I'm going to do. No, this is a great idea, Phone Boy. What's your thoughts on this? And I'd like to hear the pedal heads also.
Yeah, I mean,
if I actually literally not only took a camera and did the cooking, but also brought it with me to the grocery store to show you.
Why not?
I will bring you and show you how you can afford to purchase this and cook this meal with the stuff you have in your house, even. And I believe in not dying sooner than you have to.
Yeah, well, navigating the commercial food system is definitely something that, I think that more people need to figure that out, because if you are serious, right, yeah, and I think it's good. It's becoming more and more imperative as you start seeing just the number of things that are just compromised, even if just a little bit, but it all adds up, right? And like, yeah, you know, we gotta, and yeah, we have to navigate that horrible system. And, you know, and it's like, okay, we can't, you know, we all can't grow our own food necessarily right now, but maybe there's a time where that could actually happen. But in the meantime, we got to navigate where we're at, right? And where we're at is, well, we have to deal with this commercial food system. What's the least worst option? And, you know, in some cases, right?
Yeah. And this next story, yeah, really highlights why you so should not be consuming these particular products, because the FDA has announced a recall of major grocery brands, from Coke and Pepsi to Hershey's, Snickers, and more, due to potential rodent contamination.
Don't eat that.
You might die.
On December 26, 2025, the U.S. FDA announced a recall on dozens of brand name grocery items stored by Gold Star Distribution, Inc., due to potential salmonella contamination from the presence of rodent and avian contamination and insanitary conditions during the storage process. The impacted items include a massive list of well-known soda brands, candy companies, cereal varieties, pantry essentials, baking staples, popular condiments, and more. Gold Star Distribution, Inc. issued the recall on the same day for all of the FDA-regulated products held at a storage facility with the presence of rodent and avian contamination. The items were later shipped to multiple states. According to the FDA, it was determined that the facility conditions included rodent excrete, rodent urine, and bird droppings. No illnesses have been reported to date. However, the FDA stated that when handling or consuming contaminated items, it poses serious health risks to consumers, including the potential for bacterial contamination, which may result in illness or infection, including salmonella. Additionally, the recall announcement noted that rodents are the main reservoir of Leptospirilla, or Leptospira, the bacteria that causes leptospirosis in humans, or leptospirosis. Can you look up what leptospirosis is, phone boy?
I will see what I can do here.
Awesome. So the recall doesn't apply to frozen or refrigerated products that Gold Star Distribution shipped to retail and convenience stores, only to the shelf-stable items stored at the facility. Yeah, because the rats didn't get into the fridges and freezers, you fucking idiots. So, however, these items were sent to more than 50 grocery and convenience stores across three states, Minnesota, Indiana, and North Dakota. The major cities include Indy, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, and Fargo. So nothing to worry about. We don't care about those people.
You asked about leptospirosis, right?
Okay.
So it's a blood infection caused by bacteria of the genus Leptospira that can infect humans, dogs, rodents, and many other wild and domesticated animals. Signs and symptoms can range from none to mild, like headaches, muscle pains, and fevers, to severe, bleeding in the lungs, or meningitis. Wells disease, the acute severe form of leptospirosis, causes the infected individual to become jaundiced, develop kidney failure, and bleed. Bleeding from the lungs associated with leptospirosis is known as severe pulmonary hemorrhage syndrome, and so on. Yeah, I mean that's
wow. So it attacks your lungs, your liver, and your kidneys, apparently.
Yeah, and that's before you even get to the food that's probably also been doing all of that for such a long time. But anyway,
so bad shit. You don't want to get involved in it. So the article in the show notes has a complete list of the products that were recalled. We're going to highlight just a few of the infected products here. So you have Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper, Mountain Dew, and other sodas. Select Hershey's, Snickers, M&M's, Twix, and other candies. Certain General Mills, Post, and Kellogg cereals. And Heinz, Kraft, ConAgra, and other grocery staples.
By the way, none of those products should be consumed in any quantity by anyone. So perhaps the universe did them a favor.
Did them a favor, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that is sitting there looking at that, kind of going, yeah, that's pretty much none of that should be consumed. So
again, though, these were sent to states where the majority of our listeners do not reside. However, just saying that if it is in one of the states that affects you, be aware, do not purchase these items. Well, don't purchase them anyway, but just be aware that there's a recall and make sure you're not getting a contaminated item.
This is true. Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about allergies, which have been fun for us lately. Why seasonal allergies and hay fever symptoms are getting worse? Changes you should know.
Ah, shoo! Guess I'm tight.
That's about how I sneeze, in fact. Seasonal allergies.
About as loud, too.
Yes. Seasonal allergies, also known as hay fever, affect millions of people worldwide and seem to be worsening each year. Gee, I wonder why. The trend raises important questions about why symptoms like sneezing, itchy eyes, runny nose, and congestion are becoming more intense and lasting longer. Recent scientific findings point to significant climate allergy changes as a major factor in contributing to this increase in severity and duration, with no evidence provided. Provided, I would like to point out, seasonal allergies or allergic rhinitis occur when the immune system overreacts to airborne allergens, primarily pollen from trees, grasses, and weeds. Not happening around here this time of year. It's fucking, although, God, it's like 60 degrees here again today. I don't know what the hell.
Oh, yeah, just wait. If we have about a week of that warm weather, the trees will start popping and you will fucking hate life.
Yeah, and when pollen enters the body, the immune system mistakenly identifies these typically harmless particles as threats, triggering a release of histamines and other chemicals. This immune response produces common hay fever symptoms, including sneezing, nasal congestion or runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose or throat. The symptoms tend to fluctuate seasonally depending on the type of pollen present in the environment, commonly in spring, summer, and early fall. Besides pollen, mold spores and indoor allergens such as pet dander and dust mites can also contribute to hay fever symptoms year-round. Now, climate change... Climate allergy changes profoundly impact the duration, intensity, and geographic reach of seasonal allergies. Right. I mean, yeah, okay, we're gonna use that fear porn in here. And as global temperatures rise, plants such as ragweed and various trees begin releasing pollen earlier in the year and continue for longer periods, according to the National Institutes of Health. Whose health are they in charge of? That's what I want to know. This creates longer allergy seasons where sufferers are exposed for extended times. Additionally, higher humidity and wetter conditions can promote the growth of mold spores, another allergen source, leading to increased allergic reactions. Now, urbanization trends often introduce highly allergenic plants to city landscapes, increasing localized pollen exposure. However, or moreover, the combined effects of all allergens and air pollutants exacerbate immune responses, increasing the frequency and severity of hay fever symptoms in affected individuals. And of course, they want you to take your drugs, slave. But they mention nothing about diet because what I've discovered, and I presume part of why I've been having issues with allergies again, it's because, yeah, I haven't been eating as virtuous as I probably should be.
Well, you know, Sir Bemrose brought up a good point in the chat as well. He says, immune system incorrectly identifying and attacking threats? This couldn't have anything to do with injecting aluminum into every child when they're a few hours old, could it? I said, oh, no, yes.
Exactly, right? So they've been, yeah, so all of the other poisons, and this is the sort of the crazy thing that I've kind of seen with all of this, is that if you look at all of these things, you can kind of tell that it's like, well, this system seems to be, you know, they seem to be doing this. This other system seems to be doing this. And all of these systems are ultimately have oppressed us as human beings, right? And so you kind of go, okay, and they've done it in such a way that you can't figure out which one of it is. It's kind of the combination of the things that's causing the problem, right? But you can't say, well, it's, you know, oh, it's this, oh, it's that, oh, it's something else. Well, it's all of it, actually. And, you know, it's just kind of, and yeah, so this is exactly how this, you know, so they, you know, you can blame, you know, they're blaming climate change, right? And, you know, it's the combination of all of these things that our systems were, our bodies were never really designed to handle, but they put them in there to kind of keep us, you know, to try to keep us, you know, dumb, fat, and stupid, whatever it is they want to do, but keep us compliant with whatever kind of bullshit that they want us to believe. And
they're trying to fuck with us.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's all there is.
Yeah. So it's, but, you know, but what I've noticed for myself, right, is as my diet has deteriorated because, well, the holidays, life into living, et cetera. I've noticed that thing, you know, things that don't normally make me allergic are making me allergic, and the stuff that, and you know, the things, there's some things I'm allergic to that I can kind of deal with in small quantities, but you add enough of those things up and you add my, you know, if I'm not eating properly and therefore have lots of inflammation in my system and that kind of thing. Yeah. Guess what? My allergies are worse. So, you know, and I would say a lot of the allergies that we quote unquote have, or it's accumulation of things. And we kind of go, okay, well, that's the thing that we're most allergic to, but we're not addressing any of the other things in our environment that we might be allergic to. Just some food for thought as a lifelong allergy sufferer.
Well, you know, phone boy, if you would just quit eating that garbage, your allergies would probably go mostly away. QED, dork.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said.
Well, you know it, but you're not doing it.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, that's why we're doing it. You know, right? We're doing it now.
That's why I'm publicly shaming you into being better.
Well,
I'm
going to have to shame you, too, I suppose.
No, because I've actually been virtuous since the new year.
Yeah.
The only thing I did is I finished off a couple of swallows of the soda we had left and then threw the bottles away. Two full Kahlua and creams, sir. We're not having that convo.
Yeah. The point.
No, seriously, though, we do. We have to be. I feel like we're hypocrites to come in front of the microphone every week, all ball busting aside, and talk about how you shouldn't be eating this and you should be doing that. And yet, behind the microphone, we have not been living up to our word. Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah, well, but it's all. But I will say, I'm not necessarily even going to defend it because you're correct in that regard. But at the same time, we're also learning why we don't fuck up, right? Because every one of those times we've done it, right, something has come out of that, and we went, yeah, this is why we don't do this. This is why we shouldn't do this, right?
So, yeah, and believe me, every day that you wake up with a headache or, you know,
also
something else going on, like, yeah, that energy-wise affects me because I care about you.
Yeah, well, it affects me as the person with the headache. So, yeah, like I said,
this is kind of a give and take. Give up the shit so I don't have to keep taking you having a headache.
Okay, well, why don't you do, well, let's not take antidepressants, but
yeah. Oh yeah, no, they're just terrible, and we're going to tell you the truth about antidepressant withdrawal.
You know, Big Pharma treats us like biological machines. Those drugs that they're dishing out are, for the most part, very toxic, especially the antipsychotic drugs. They rot your brain out with long-term use, and they lie about it. You know, they won't tell the patient how dangerous these drugs are. The antipsychotic drugs are some of the most dangerous drugs used in medicine today.
They really are. And Dr. Mark Horowitz knows just how hard it can be to come off antidepressants. When I got down to a very low dose, not even off the drugs, my entire world exploded, the London-based doctor tells BBC Science Focus. I had trouble sleeping, and I'd wake up in the mornings in a full-blown panic, like I was being chased by a wild animal, and then that would go on for 10 or 11 hours of the day. He felt far worse and had entirely different symptoms compared to when he had been originally prescribed the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, or SSRI, escitalopram, 12 years earlier at the age of 21. So, wow, he was on this since he was 21. Wow. So antidepressants are widely viewed as a huge success in the world of mental health treatment. Around a fifth of the population of the UK and the US use an antidepressant each year, and a 2025 study by King's College London found that 75% of people who took SSRIs, the most common type of antidepressants, which include citalopram, fluoxetine, paroxetine, and sertraline. Hey, my mother was on sertraline. They thought they were helpful. Wish I had seen this when she was still alive. So they're often used long-term. And in an investigation by BBC Panorama in 2023, they found around 2 million people in England had been on antidepressants for more than 5 years. Now, this figure is even higher now. And in the U.S., figures from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention of Your Health suggest it's at least 25 million. God, that's a lot. But what happens when we feel like we don't need them anymore? Or, in some cases, you can't afford them, so you don't get them. So, as Dr. Horowitz found, coming off them can be difficult. And he's not alone. The peer support websites Surviving Antidepressants and The Inner Compass have a combined 1 million hits a month from people seeking help. Dr. Horowitz says in the UK, most people use the drugs for years, if not decades. The problem is, there aren't many long-term trials to analyze. The lack of longer-term RCTs is not because they're hard to do, says Professor Hengartner, but because the main sponsor of clinical research, the pharmaceutical industry, Big Pharma, obviously has no interest in studying harms imposed by its product. Of course not. So moreover, it seems that academic psychiatry, which strongly promotes widespread antidepressant use, is not honestly interested in the subject either. Well, no shit, Sherlock. Oh, wow. I had not read this before. These people are fucking stupid.
Yeah,
a water is wet statement. Of course Pig Pharma's not going to be like, hey, our drugs might kill you, but please keep taking them so you don't kill yourself.
And obviously they're not interested in your long-term benefit. I think that should be
They have no fucks to give about the long-term negative effects of these medications, and we know this. So he points out, this doctor does, to two long-term treatment interruption trials, which he says do provide strong evidence of withdrawal effects. The first, published in Biological Psychiatry in 1998. Wow. Just let that sink in for a second. Almost 40 years ago now.
It found 30.
Is it 30?
Yes.
Okay, my math was off. Sorry. I don't know why. Oh, that's right. 80s would be. Never mind. The point is, almost 30 years ago, this study was published, and found that 60% of patients coming off of the SSRI sertraline and 66% of those coming off the SSRI paroxetine, their medication was swapped for placebo after an average of 11 months, they experienced 4 or more withdrawal effects. This met the criteria for what the researchers called discontinuation syndrome. And the evidence from this trial is fully consistent with the findings from observational studies such as Horowitz's in 2025. That study, published in May of 2025 in Psychiatry Research, found that 64% of those who had taken antidepressants for 2 years or more reported moderate or severe withdrawal effects. We found a very clear relationship between how long you've been on the drugs and your risk of withdrawal, says Dr. Horowitz. After 8 weeks, we found very low levels. Once people were on the drugs for 2 years, we found extremely high levels of withdrawal. So what do we know about how to withdraw from antidepressants as safely as possible? Experts recommend tapering slowly. The UK's Royal College of Psychiatrists website has examples of tapering plans, but stresses that patients must speak to their prescriber before trying them. When tapering, the last few milligrams are the hardest to get off, warns Dr. Horowitz, who's written the Maudsley Deprescribing Guidelines, which sets out for doctors exactly how to help patients withdraw from each specific antidepressant. It is important to recognize how significant the disabilities from these conditions can be. And he's completely right. However, there is one thing that I'm very concerned with. Speak to your prescriber. Your prescriber is going to be absolutely adamant about you not coming off of these. Bet me.
Yeah, exactly, because they get paid every time you do re-up your prescription, I'm sure.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I am all for weaning yourself off of these medications 1,000%. But just know that if you're going to do so and you go to your paid pharmacill, think about what I just said, paid pharmacill, they are probably going to either try to put you on a different medication. Oh, let me just lower your dose and then we'll monitor you for 6 months. And then we might... They're going to draw this out as long as humanly possible to make the most money they can.
Yeah, well, and yes, and I think it is, yes, of course they will. It is, but yeah, and hopefully, yeah, I think it, this is, yes, the drug system is just evil. I mean, there's just no getting around it. And yeah, just say no. Anyway, I'm a lot happier now that I've said that. I don't know about you, honey.
I'm always happy.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you. All right. When a family member or when a family welcomed a man into their home at Christmas, they never thought he'd stay for 45 years.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it was the day before Christmas Eve, and a recent homemakers, Rob and Diane Parsons, were surprised with a knock on the door. Opening it, Rob looked upon a rather strange sight. A man stood there with a wheeled garbage bin containing his possessions and a frozen chicken under his left arm. Rob didn't know it at the time, but he was in the middle of an interaction that wouldn't just change his life forever, but his community too. Rob vaguely recognized the man as Ronnie Lockwood, someone whom he'd been told he had to be kind and considerate towards, as he was a bit different. I said, "Ronnie, what's with the chicken?" He said, "Somebody gave it to me for Christmas." And then I said two words that changed all of our lives, Mr. Parson told the BBC, and I'm not exactly sure why I said them. I said, "Come in." Lockwood was not a native of the Welsh capital of Cardiff, as Parsons was. He had been sent there from 200 miles away at 15 years old to attend a school for the subnormal, where he had no friends, no teachers who knew him, and no social worker. The autistic youth then floundered between homelessness and odd jobs and was already 30 by the time he knocked on the Parsons' door. That outburst of Christmas empathy did indeed change the family's life forever, as Ronnie Lockwood became, as the British say, part of the furniture, living there a full 45 years as a member of the family before dying from a stroke age 75. Only once in 45 years did Rob and Diane ever consider asking him to leave, and as strange as their arrangement appeared to others, it never bothered them. Recounting their late and dearest friend to the BBC, the parents of two and grandparents of five described him as kind, amazing, and a remarkable help with kids. "He had a great heart, Ronnie. He was kind. He was frustrating," said Diane. "Sometimes I was his mother, sometimes I was his social worker, and sometimes I was his carer." Somebody gives care, I guess. Somebody said to our children one day, "How do you cope with Ronnie when your friends come to the house?" And they said, well, we don't think about it, really. It's just Ronnie. On that first Christmas, Parsons had asked his friends and family to get some simple presents for their visitor, who was in turn overwhelmed with emotion from the kindness shown to him by the strangers. And it was a time of the year he always looked forward to, during which he volunteered often at the nearest church and bought for Rob and Diane the same Marks and Spencer gift card every year with as much delight in watching them open it as during the last. It wasn't long after Lockwood arrived at the Parsons, who were then without children, sought advice as to what they might be able to do to help the man get a leg up. They were advised by a social worker that in order to get a job, a worker must have an address. Mr. Parsons noted the irony in that statement, that you have to have a job to afford an address, a catch-22 that many homeless people never escape from. They eventually got Lockwood a job as a street cleaner and bought him his first new set of clothes since he was a teenager. Every morning, Mr. Parsons, a lawyer by profession, would leave the house an hour early so as to be able to take Lockwood to his job, an arrangement that lasted for years. Lockwood was described as being an irreplaceable help with their children when their children were born, and meticulous in his attention to volunteer work at the local food bank and parish church. After his death, a new $2 million well-being center that included facilities for the unhoused and homeless attached to Glenwood Church in Cardiff was named Lockwood House after Ronnie, who left it some $52,000 in his will. This story is a reminder of how much a simple act of kindness can do to change the world, whether your own, those of your family, or community. I think that's why I picked that story. Yeah, there's a reason I read that story. It was hard for me to get through. But it's, you know, there's a statement in here about the fact that, yeah, the system is set up in a certain way that...
system is set up that if you are of a certain, you know, financial class or... Yeah, it's stacked against you. Is basically in the UK and in, you know, our own country. We're supposed to be such a progressive nation. We're not. The US has become a fucking joke. The way they handle their veterans, the way they handle their homeless, they'd rather have some fucking foreigner bust in, give them a job, give them benefits, give them money, give them a house. Fuck the citizens. Yeah. Fuck the veterans.
My ex-father-in-law was in the Air Force and had medical problems like pretty much his entire life, and therefore had to deal with the medical system a lot. It just seems like they could never do anything for him, right? It was just always like, you know, they try this drug, try that. It's like they could never, his back was never correct. And he was of the mindset that he wouldn't be willing to try marijuana, even though we had it legal in Washington State for, you know, I don't remember when it got legalized. But anyway, during the last 10 years of his life or something. So he could have had options, but, you know, I've seen what they do, and this is wrong. That's why we try to highlight some of the stuff that we highlight here. We try to point out the good and the bad and the ugly, and, you know, we can create a better world. Let's do it.
That's right. If the opportunity to shine a light on some shady shit is there, we will be the ones with the 4-cell mag light.
That's right. Well, I think this is another one of these stories that I think is, you know, kind of spoke to me when I found it. But this is a high school student who supported. There's a high school that supported its star student when she needed it most, and 20 years later, she actually paid it back.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
So from the Philadelphia Inquirer, the story centers on Sonia Lewis, founder of Student Loan Doctor and graduate of Bodine International Affairs High School in the northern part of Philly. Raised by her single mom and grandmother, both of whom were teachers, Lewis always excelled academically. Class president, student government, honor rolls. You name it, she was on it. But she was forced into a caregiving role when her mother was hospitalized with bacterial meningitis just after her grandmother had recovered from cancer. School suddenly moved to the back bench amid hospital appointments, form filing, and care for the household, which her mother couldn't do. Set to graduate in the class of 05, school principal Karen P. Hill noticed that one of the school's standout students hadn't applied for federal student loans and wanted to know why. I told the principal, "We don't have any money. We missed the deadline," Lewis told the Inquirer, remembering the conversation she had with Hill. "There was no money coming in from my mom. We had my grandmother's retirement, but that wasn't enough." Her grandmother, she said, considered taking out a second mortgage on her house, but Lewis wouldn't allow it. She planned to spend a year working and applying for the loans next year. Hill was having none of it, however, and Lewis got wind of her plans when, at the end of the year award ceremony, each and every one was awarded to her. She ended up collecting $16,200 in academic fund and endowment stipends and prizes that are typically shared among the student body, but which the principal had channeled to a single student down on her luck. It allowed her to enroll at Bloomsburg University and pay for her first year of tuition. That set her on the path toward a doctorate in higher education. Once there, she earned scholarships, worked several jobs, and kept grinding. Before long, she was working as an academic coach and founded the Student Loan Doctor, which provides both consultation and planning for students in debt on how to manage or escape it. She has helped medical students in particular get hundreds of thousands in loans forgiven. But throughout all of her success, Lewis never forgot that night when Bodine sent her off with thousands to her name when she and her family had nothing.
A few days before winter break in 2025, Lewis entered the Bodine Auditorium with a massive smile on her face and a big surprise on her lips. The students knew only that a successful alumni was visiting for a presentation. She was introduced as one whose journey began right here in this building, and then she then explained to the students that as they began to enter the period of applying for scholarships and worrying about tuition for college, there was one thing they'd be able to forget about. That's when Bodine High School mascot, a globe, walked out with a big cardboard check for $16,200, enough to pay for the senior trip, senior brunch, yearbooks, etc., for the whole senior student body.
There have been larger such gifts to schools in America in the past, and there'll be many more in the future. But one might imagine there will be fewer that mean as much to a single person as Lewis, whose school gave back to a star student in need.
Yeah, we're both having trouble with this story. Yeah.
Yeah, this one's personal for me.
Yeah, well, yeah, personal for me, too. But, you know, it does happen. All right. Well,
I guess she must have had good grades, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, she worked hard, you know, to get out of that. Well.
I just read this.
Oh, okay. We've now gotten to the point where we need to have a laugh. And so we're going to go to the cavalcade of stupidity. We're going to go to the cavalcade of stupidity.
Hi-dee-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
As you may have heard, somebody purchased the Avenue Q soundtrack on vinyl.
And I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, if you don't know what Avenue Q is, it's a musical comedy featuring puppets and human actors with music and lyrics by Robert Lopez and Jeff Marx and a book by Jeff Witte. It won Best Musical Book and Score at the 2004 Tony Awards. The show's format is a parody of Sesame Street, but its content involves adult-oriented themes. It's been praised for its approach to themes of racism, homosexuality, and internet pornography. The musical premiered off-Broadway in 2003 at the Vineyard Theater, co-produced by the Vineyard Theater and the New Group. In July of that same year, the show moved to the John Golden Theater on Broadway, where it ran until 2009, playing for over 2,500 performances. It transferred to the off-Broadway New World stages within weeks of ending its Broadway run, where it played until 2019. Together, the two productions played 6,569 performances. That's a lot of performances. Major productions have been staged in Las Vegas and the West End, and the musical has been staged and toured in several countries around the world. A school-friendly script has been produced. The principal cast includes four puppeteers and three human actors. The puppets, characters Princeton, Kate, Nikki, and others are played by the unconcealed puppeteers as the costumed human actors interact with the puppets. So, we played the whole soundtrack because we bought it on vinyl. And, well, we'd like to dedicate this to our neighbors. Well, especially the Airbnb guests.
Take her home!
She's wasted! Yay!
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay.
No,
your left.
Okay. Oh my God, Kate. Oh my God, Kate. No one's ever touched me like this before. You can't put your finger there.
Put your finger there.
You can be as loud as the hell you want when you're making love.
love. You can be as loud as the hell you want when you're making love. You can be as loud as the hell you want when you're making love. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah!
Louder! You're not allowed to be loud.
All right. Yeah, that's. We'll play the full version of that in Studio 33. That is a
terrible degenerates.
Terrible degenerates. But this is what happens when Rev's on vacation and leaves me in charge of the cavalcade of stupidities.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Okay. Well, it is time to go to, I guess, the Tales from Rideshare segment.
Nope. I didn't fucking work this week. I was lazy. I was unmotivated. I will work next week. I promised myself I will. But I didn't. So we're just going to jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun. And I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
Well, if you don't have any special plans, you can hang out with us tonight in Studio 33 after the Lotus Effect. But if you have not yet called in to weigh in on your favorite winter activity, 253-237-3321. We look forward to hearing what you have to say. Honey, what are you cooking tonight?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Actually, I made a frittata the other day. I made a bacon Swiss burger frittata. And we're going to heat it up and eat it so that it's out of the fridge. So leftovers for the win. And I know you said you liked it when I made it. So hopefully you will like it again as a leftover.
Yes, it will. Because, I'm sure it will be.
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
You know, we didn't actually write anything in the script for Toast and Jam. We didn't even talk about this. So this is, I think.
Do we even have anything?
Well, no. We have. Okay. I think we can talk about the fact that we had everybody over again on New Year's Eve, and we did the.
We did a rockin' New Year's Eve party. Had the biggest Ka game and the most amount of people on Dirty Feeds we've ever had.
Yeah, that's right. And we also played before we got on the mic. We played Mexican Train Dominoes, which
we did that. Was a lot of fun. We actually did not have enough trains for everyone, so we ended up using the little ducks that you had bought that glow in the dark. I love these.
Yeah,
little
exactly.
Ducks. They're so cute.
Yeah, we also did. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. It was kind of a weird week because we had everybody over and we have
a story to tell from actually the New Year's Eve.
Okay.
So my oldest son, when we were playing Ka, I had taken the name Barry McCawkiner. He took him all night, and I'd like to thank Weirdo for the spelling on that. It took him all night. I think I had actually had him getting my AirPods or something from downstairs, and he finally got the realization of what he sounded out my name, and for 5 straight minutes this boy laughed so hard he could not breathe. He thought that was the absolute funniest thing he had ever seen. And of course he was, you know, on a mushy trip, so he was having a great goddamn time, as were the rest of us. I mean, we were having a blast, but it was just a pandemonious day. There was so much fun. We made ginger snaps.
Yes.
And you consumed almost a dozen of those things. Yeah. I've never seen you eat that many cookies
life. It's been a while since I've had that many cookies at once. So,
But they were good. That's the whole reason people demand my ginger snap cookies, is because that recipe is so good, you can't not eat a handful at a time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, fortunately we sent those out of the house, so I don't have to see.
We sent the cinnamon rolls out. We sent the pizza that we ordered because we phoned it in. Yes, we were horrible. We ordered Domino's.
Yeah, I ate wings, but I still. Yeah.
I have one word: heartburn. Oh, my God. Between the couple of ginger snaps I had and that horrible Domino's pizza, my stomach was letting me know in no uncertain terms, you screwed up.
Yeah, well, yeah, my allergies flared up enough that I know I screwed up, and probably the headaches and whatnot. Yes, and it takes a while for all of that stuff to clear out of my system. So, yeah, trust me, I need to be much clearer about all of that going forward. But, you know, sometimes
That's the whole reason why I'm putting more effort into cooking meals. And like I said, I'm seriously thinking about kicking this channel off to go through the process of shopping, the process of cooking. I want to better people. And despite the fact that, you know, we talk about it every week on the show and everything like that,
I think,
feel like there's more that I can be doing. And if I'm cooking anyway, what's the problem?
Yeah, well, it seems like video content is very appealing, and I'm not, I've never been a fan of producing videos. So, yeah, that might be something we're going to have to.
It's really not that hard. I think between you and I, we could do it. But we'll talk about it behind the mic. It's just something that I'm really considering. And the pedal heads can weigh in if they think that that's something that they would be interested in, you know, giving a watch to. Because a lot of people love when I present, you present pictures of the stuff that I cook, and knowing how to make it and the ingredients that go into it might be beneficial.
Exactly. Well, all right. I think what will be beneficial is that we move in to the weigh-in topic for the day.
Well, would that be because
the world needs a wake-up call? We're going to phone it in
to 253-237-3321. By the way, I think I saw something on YouTube about the movie They Live. They actually the homeless encampment was an actual homeless encampment in Los Angeles. For example, it's some kind of the world does need a wake up call. And that movie was, if you actually watch that movie, I feel, you know, we talk about the fact that, you know, Mike Judge was a prophet. I think John Carpenter had it pretty right, too, in a lot of the ways here. But anyway, enough about that. Let's talk about your favorite winter activity. Mama T had texted in and she said her favorite winter activity is in my recliner under a pile of blankets with at least one fur baby. I can't disagree with that at all. That's exactly what we got.
I'm a fan of that.
All right. I think this one is a make good from last week.
Hello, hello, hello. I feel like I just leave a vocal mail like every other week. Because Saturday hits, and you know, especially over holiday and whatnot, you're just like, oh, yeah, I forgot to call in. Anyway, yeah, resolution for 2026 of the year of new. Yeah, I'm kind of like on and off about resolution, like New Year resolutions and whatnot. I don't really do them too much, but there's definitely just using it as a contemplation thing. Like, yeah, I mean, I get it. It can be, like, I understand the cynical side of it because I'm very much of that nature. But, you know, just do it now sort of thing. But there's something also about just, like, having the starting line, you know, and whether or not to, you know, start on it with your spouse or whatever kind of thing. Like, hey, here's a point where I started, and it's a clear mark sort of deal. Kind of like, hey, I started there. Kind of deal, and it's just an easy way to, like, you know, start 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, or whatever kind of deal. There's something about that. But yeah, there's still something. I have some stuff, bottom line, I guess. I just haven't really polished it out yet. But just how I interact specifically with a couple individuals that I know, and just how I want to be better with them, and not let them little stupid squabble stuff get in the way of a friendship relationship kind of deal and whatnot. And even just some stuff always pointed out as far as, like, you know, hey, you kind of are more harsh with this person sort of thing and whatnot. And, you know, what's causing that and things of that nature. So anyway, yeah. There's just that, and I think there's just something good about, you know, hey, where are we at? We as a collective, you know, like, and then where are we at individually, and just kind of going, okay, you know, hey, we're the one who chooses our success. You know, success isn't from somebody else. It's from ourselves, and looking at ourselves, and, you know, what can we do better at work? What can we do better at home? You know, yada, yada, yada. So anyway. Bloviations. All right. I love you guys. Stay dangerous. Give a hearty, hearty.
Kaka.
Yeah, caca, that's right. Oh, caca. All right, well, yeah, Blowfish State.
Love it.
Blowfish State. I think I need to write that down as a potential show title. All right. And he did call back in. This is for this week, so here we go.
I'm aware that I'm experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Thumbboy. Well, I called the number. Excuse me. Winter activity. I was contemplating it for a bit, and it's kind of interesting, like the spring cleaning and all that jazz, and wife kind of does that, or does do most of that, but yeah, just kind of like thinking like, you know, whether or not your apartment or a house or something like that, because may or may not have property to maintain, you know, then just the logistics of if you're snowed in or something like that, you gotta, you know, what else are you gonna do? You're gonna take care of the inside. Sort of thing, because there's only so much you can do outside, or there's nothing you can do outside, and all that jazz, and just, yeah, just think about it. Never got into, like, really winter sports or anything like that, done it a time or so, but, yeah. Anyway, so this is kind of the hunkering down, growing up with the wife, you know, watching some movies or whatnot, and, because it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's a little chillier outside or whatever, and, or muddy or whatever, you know, snow, whatever the condition be. Yeah. So, just can't say anything in particular, but just kind of hunkering down a little bit. But then for me, it's the not letting that take over sort of deal. Because it's like, yeah, it's a great excuse to go through that stuff in the drawer or the room or the, you know, the garage or whatever and, you know, take care of the stuff. And then you end up having an excuse, ah, it's too cold or whatever the thing is. And it's like, oh, you know, carpe diem that time, and you know, do it while it is cooler and it's not too hot or whatever, or you can just focus on just that thing because, you know, maybe the outside's telling you you don't want to be out there sort of deal. So anyway, just a little contemplation for myself. So I've been thinking about the last couple of days. So, you know, go tackle that corner of the house or whatever while the outdoors isn't calling you to come outside. So anyway, that's it. Well, the Christmas parties are almost over, but they're not completely. So, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not something, contemplating your navel, go ahead and give a hearty.
Kaka! Well, you know, there is something to be said about decluttering a little bit. We've been kind of doing that here in Casa Lotus. With having people, you know, having had people over and Christmas and all of that, yeah, there's been a lot of opportunity to declutter things, and yeah, I don't Christmas parties. No, I thought Christmas parties all happened before Christmas. By this point, you should be done with Christmas parties. You should be done with New Year's parties. You should be putting everything away. I finally have all the vinyl put back in the living room again. But yeah, this is. So yeah, we're all over, but we have more pedal heads who are weighing in on this topic of, yeah, your favorite winter activity.
Hey y'all, my favorite winter activity would probably be either ice skating or, if there's a lot of snow on the ground, sledding. Those are my two favorite activities. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Yeah. So yeah, those are definite winter activities. I'm trying to think if, yeah, I've never done either of those, but yeah, those are things to do. All right, let's go. I think we got one here that has a favorite winter activity.
My favorite winter activity, if there's any around, is playing in the snow. So if it's like just a little bit of snow, I'll go ahead and make little baby snowmen and put them in the freezer so I have them for later. And, like, last year, we've got a fire pit at my apartment complex, and somebody did, like, a little coven of, and it wasn't me, it was, like, a little coven of snow people that they set around the top of the bricks in a circle. It was the funniest shit. But, yeah, the most recent I ever got to play in, like, substantial snow was when I drove truck. It was winter, and I was at my terminal in Gary, Indiana. And I hadn't seen snow like that since I was a kid in New York. And I was like a kid in a candy store, man. I bundled up. I started making snowballs and throwing them at my truck. So one of the driver managers comes out and sees me doing this and stomps up to me. He goes, "Whose truck is that?" "That's mine." why are you throwing snow at your truck? I said, because I haven't seen snow like this since I was a kid. I wanted to play in the snow, and I like to see the snowballs explode. And he just shook his head and walked away. And, you know, I didn't give a shit. I just made up another snowball and lobbed it at my truck. And I did that for probably a good 30 minutes before I got too cold and had to go inside. But, yeah, playing in the snow if it's available. That's my favorite winter activity. Talk to you guys later. Love you. Bye.
Love you too. That's a great. Yeah.
It is. And quite frankly, you know, having driven a truck, what the fuck is it to him? It's my truck. I'm throwing snowballs at it. It don't fucking matter why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I want to fucking do it. And it's none of your business. Walk on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you should, people, you know, if people are having fun doing something, as long as they're not hurting anybody in the process, what's the issue?
Those are the kind of people I want to wad up a really big snowball and lob it at their fucking head and hit them right in the back. Just poof, knock him forward, fuck, into face first into the snow. But that's just the evil part of me.
Let's not do that. But we will play this, last voicemail we have here.
So the question of the day is your favorite winter activity. Well, that would be fucking snow camping. Do it at least once a year. Go out there. We have a ice fishing shelter. We actually got our own rug for the bottom. Cots, bed mattress to go on top of the cots, warm sleeping bags, fleece blanket over the top of that. We have a wood stove this year that we're putting inside of it. We are going to be toasty warm, and it's going to be snowing and effing cold outside, which means just build a big-ass bonfire to keep everybody warm. We're not the only ones going to be out there. We got my buddy Dan, who sets up a propane fire pit inside of a shelter that is not airtight, thankfully, because there'd be a lot of fumes. And then another buddy who just straight-up has this little tiny cot tent thing that's single person. He just has super warm gear and stays warm that way. A lot of fun. Gotta have the right year though. Bye.
Yeah, that snuck up on me real quick. Yeah, so yeah, camping in winter. Well,
considering I lived in a tent for 2 years, which includes all four seasons, I can't hate on that.
No, yeah, that sounds good. Well, anyway, if you want to have your own ass bonfire, you know, which might be a show title.
You wrote down ass bonfire, I would hope.
Yeah, that's what I said.
If you, nice.
Yes, but you can call or text 253-237-3321. And yeah, we'll if you do that between now and the time we get to the higher the last call segment, then we'll play your voicemail. If not, we'll play it next week as we often do. But
so I'll ask the all important question, phone boy. What's your favorite winter activity?
My favorite winter activity is, well, used to be going for a run, but maybe I'll do that again at some point. But
I was going to say that's not exclusive to winter though, because of the fact you do that year round.
Well, when I'm doing it, yeah. I don't know. Sometimes just going outside at like sunset or something is nice, right? I don't really have I don't know. There's just sometimes it's just being outside. Sometimes being outside's enough. You know what I mean? It's just I don't really have a. I don't have a specific activity that I like because I've done the snow thing with the kids. I mean, we had a driveway that wasn't quite, it was steep, but not quite steep enough to really get a good like running start going down the hill kind of thing. They tried to do the snow tubing. I never actually did it myself. Probably the only thing I've done is walked outside in the snow in bare feet, which, you know, is something you can't.
Okay. So my question being, would you snow tube?
I'd probably give it a shot. You know, it's not to say, like I said, it was just, you know, the only time I ever was outside with, you know, most of the time was with the kids. And yeah, I'm tend to be kind of I'd like to stay inside, although I do like going out on, but I do like sitting out on the patio and listening to the snow when it falls. So,
it's nice to know that there's other people other than me that understand that you actually can hear snow fall. Like, it makes a sound, folks.
Yeah. There was when we did the big patio in Wisteria Lane, you could go outside and, you know, you go like, I remember like Christmas night or something, you go outside and it's usually when it's snowing. And so, yeah, you could actually just hear it. And it's just quiet and nobody, you know, there wasn't a lot of people driving because it's holidays, whatever. It just was like, you know. Yeah, that one might be my favorite activities, listening to snowfall.
Did Attila the Hun ever go out?
No, not that
I know. You know why? Because if she ever fell and got snow covered, she'd look like a fucking Yeti and people would try to shoot her.
Anyway. All right. So what's your favorite winter activity?
I fucking hate winter. I don't have a favorite activity. I fucking hate winter. I mean, I have gone sledding and stuff. I would, if you were up for it, go snow tubing. There's a place in Pigeon Forge that you can do that. It's indoors and everything. But I'm not a fan of winter. I don't like being cold. I don't like having... I like looking at the snow. It's wonderful when it's doing it. Don't ask me to drive in it. Being from the Northeast, I've had more than my fair share enough of it. Don't want none. Especially if I don't have a four-wheel drive vehicle, which I don't currently down here. And I don't see myself buying one for the rare occasions when we get enough snow to actually need one, which happens maybe every 4 to 5 years if we're lucky. So, yeah, just not a really big fan of winter. I mean, I have to agree with Mama. Put me under some nice toasty blankets with my fur babies, the one on top and the one underneath.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
My problem is you're not very furry, sir.
No, I'm not, but that's okay. But I do exude a lot of body warmth, so, you know, there is that. I think it's time for us to get high. What do you think?
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
Sometimes I wish I freebased cocaine. It would make weight loss easier. But I ain't about getting into that shit. I don't want to fucking die. But this is very much some positive news coming out of... fuck California, because officials are awarding $30 million in marijuana revenue to support research on THC drinks, terpenes, and tribal cannabis sales.
It's a step in the right direction after all.
Now, of course, we know California is a legal state, and their officials have awarded nearly $30 million in grants for marijuana-focused academic research projects. The government-funded studies will focus on issues such as cannabis use by older people, the effects of THC beverages, the therapeutic potential of novel cannabinoids, how compounds like terpenes affect product flavoring, tribal participation in the legal market, and the environmental impact of marijuana licensing programs. This marks the third round of grants delivered through the program, which is funded by marijuana tax revenue, raising the total distributions to about $80 million. Are you listening, Tennessee? You're missing out. So the Department of Cannabis Control, DCC, said it prioritized proposals in research areas, including educational methods of improving public health and safety, crop yields, state and local marijuana policies, consumer preferences, environmental sustainability, and other topics. All research findings will be made available at no cost to the public to support broad access to rigorous science-backed research while contributing to the national understanding of cannabis, the department said in a press release on Monday. DCC received 149 proposals, it said. Funding decisions were based on researchers demonstrating strong scientific methodologies, the potential of their research to improve public understanding of cannabis and its effects, and to inform future policymakers. Now, here's a couple examples of grant awardees and their research initiatives. So, UC San Diego got one for cannabis use and product selection among older adults. The study seeks understanding of how older adults weigh product features like potency, cost, and safety when purchasing cannabis. Findings will inform labeling, education, and retail strategies to improve consumer safety and support evidence-based cannabis policy for aging populations. Now, they received $643,428. UC Davis got $698,537 for pathways to partnership with the tribal cannabis market. This study will examine California's tribal cannabis markets and identify models for tribal-state collaboration. The project will produce regulatory templates and partnership pathways to enhance consumer safety, environmental sustainability, and economic opportunities while respecting tribal sovereignty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. Well,
sorry, that one I just can't let go. Like, No, yeah, that feels grimy.
Yeah, that's just kind of like, yeah, we need to muscle our way into the... Yeah.
That's exactly what it feels like, is we've already raped the American Indian. Let's do it again.
Well, here,
that's what that reads like to me. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
I do not like the fact that the state is sticking their dick in the tribal affairs.
Yeah. Well,
they need it chopped off in this one.
Okay, so... All
so,
right,
so UCLA got $2 million for cannabinoid... Write that one down. Cannabinoid therapeutics, synthesis, binding, safety, and computations. This project will study and characterize novel cannabinoids with therapeutic potential. UC San Diego got $1,219,52 for price and tax trends and their effects on cannabis sales. Evidence from multi-state retail scanner data. Now, using comprehensive retail scanner data across 20 plus U.S. states, this project will analyze consumer responsiveness to price changes and tax rates, providing actionable insights to guide equitable health-oriented taxation policies. What I want to know is, why are they looking at 20 other states?
I don't know, but it's good. You know, it probably to say, well, how high can we make the taxes and people will still buy?
Well, they're about to get fucking fooled if they're looking at places like Michigan. Those motherfuckers have got the cheapest weed on the market, and it is absolutely fire.
Probably because it's not taxed anywhere near what it is in California. But anyway.
Well, that's because California are a bunch of douchebags who want all the money and none of the responsibility.
Sounds about right.
So UC Berkeley, which got $731,754. Is assessing the environmental benefits of cannabis licensure. The study compares licensed and unlicensed cultivation sites to quantify improvements in water, habitat, and pesticide management following licensure. There shouldn't be any pesticides on your weed. This is unacceptable. That's poison. You're smoking poison at that point. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, well, I also have a problem with this. Because marijuana users are being unjustly jailed for allegedly driving under the influence, according to a government-funded study.
I clearly don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Laws aimed at preventing marijuana-impaired driving in almost 20 states are causing innocent people who show no signs of impairment to be criminalized and imprisoned for allegedly operating vehicles while under the influence, according to a new government-funded study. Lawmakers and regulators aiming to reduce drug-impaired driving have long sought to apply a familiar strategy from alcohol enforcement, setting a numerical limit of THC in the bloodstream beyond which a driver is presumed to be impaired, commonly referred to as a per se amount. But the new study suggests that the approach may be badly misaligned with science related to impairment from cannabis, the components and metabolites of which can remain in the body for days or weeks after use when impairment is no longer an issue. Truck drivers have to deal with this all the time, right?
Yes, they do.
Yes, many regular users of cannabis exceed zero tolerance and per se THC cut point concentration days after their last use, risking legal consequences despite no evidence of impairment. The study, which was published in the scientific journal Clinical Chemistry and partially funded by the National Institutes of Health in the state of California, well, that's what they found anyway. Now, although I think anybody who's been dealing with that knows the reality, the finding echo earlier research showing weak or inconsistent links between THC blood levels and crash risk. Large epidemiological studies have found that while marijuana use may slightly increase collision risk, the effect is far smaller than that of alcohol use. The authors noted that alcohol generally cannot be detected 1 to 2 days after the last ingestion, whereas THC can be measured up to 30 days after last use because of its lipophilic nature. Current cannabis blood concentrations used to identify impaired drivers could land innocent people in jail, according to the Association for Diagnostics and Laboratory Medicine, which publishes the journal that the study appeared in. They said it in a press release. Now, cannabis blood limits laws lack scientific credibility and are not an accurate determinant of when drivers should face criminal charges or not. The authors of the study conclude that more work needs to be done to address how to best identify drivers who are under the influence of cannabis and are unsafe to drive. Now, despite evidence showing no correlation between the detection of THC in the blood and driving impairment, 6 states in the United States have per se laws using 2 or 5 nanograms per milliliter of THC as the cutoff point for the driving under the influence of cannabis, while 12 states have a zero-tolerance law, the journal's press release says. So, yeah, they're still fucking with you, of course.
They're going to keep fucking with them because they're going to try to reverse this under those grounds. That's what I see happening, is they're going to have all of these bullshit charges like, oh, look what it does, look what it does, look what it does, except for it fucking doesn't. Put your shit on the table. Compare your fucking drunk driving, deaths, crashes, etc., and then put them up against the ones where marijuana was involved solely. Not in addition to, but solely. And then we will see the truth. Until then, shut the fuck up.
All right. Well, let's go to our tech segment. What do you say?
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Oh, I have a feeling if you own one of these, you're definitely going to want to stick it up the manufacturer's ass. Because yes. Pet Libro, your pet feeder, is feeding data to anyone who asks.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
From the This Is Why We Don't Participate in IoT department, the author of this blog post, a security researcher, was looking at the Pet Libro app. They make smart pet feeders, water fountains, and other IoT pet products. Okay, stop right there. If you are too fucking lazy to feed your animal, water your animal, etc., you do not deserve to have an animal, and you get what you fucking get with this product. Continuing on. Millions of pet owners use these things to feed their cats and dogs remotely. What he found out? Yeah, a lot of security vulnerabilities. Authentication bypass. You can log in as anyone. This is a big one. Their social login API at /member/auth/third login doesn't verify OAuth tokens. Just accepts an email and a Google ID directly from the client. Yay! And you get back a full session token, member ID, email, and everything needed to access the account. But how do you get someone's Google ID? Well, easy. Google's People API lets you look up anyone's Google ID from their email. It's public information. Google IDs are not secrets. They're exactly what they're supposed to verify the auth token server side, not just trust a client-submitted ID. So the entire authentication model is backwards. They're treating the Google ID like a password when it's essentially public information. Now you can also access anyone's pet data. The pet detail endpoint, I'm not even going to go through it, okay, doesn't even check if you own the pet. It just sends any pet ID. Now you can get device serial numbers and MAC addresses too. From the pet ID, you can get all bound devices via this other, you know, very long
You don't have to read the endpoint. I'm sure anybody who gives a fuck is already, is probably
checking it out.
Yeah, probably already checking it out. It'll be in the show notes in any case.
Right. Now you can also hijack any device. All the device APIs accept any serial number without checking ownership. So you can change the feeding schedules, trigger manual feeds, access camera feeds, because that's great. Because any would-be thief can just call up your pet feeder and look around and case your house. You can also modify the device settings. Basically, anything the owner can do, you can do. Now, they can also access private audio recordings. Pet Libro devices let owners record mealtime messages for their pets. Oh my God. These audio IDs are sequential and incrementing. The endpoint lets you assign any audio to any device. I'm triggered. Fuck you. I'm triggered. Why? Why are you?
Hi, Fluffy. I love you so much. I hope you like the food I left you while I was away on vacation.
Oh my God.
Yes, and you're also triggering Sir Bemrose in the chat. This fucker has a microphone? Yeah, it does.
Yes. That's what I'm saying, Sir Bemrose. I agree with you completely. And you can add yourself as a shared owner. This is the best. The only endpoint that checks permissions is removing a shared owner. But adding one? Yeah, wide open. So the worst part is this company sent this dude money for the security vulnerability, then demanded he sign an NDA, trusting he would. Right. They took it about a month to resolve 5 of the 6 vulnerabilities, but left an old vulnerable endpoint for one of the bugs active for legacy compatibility and monitoring upgrade rates. planning to enforce upgrades? Within 2 weeks. After they were informed of the blog post by the security researcher, they finally removed the last vulnerable endpoint on December 28th.
Yeah, and he reported this thing at the beginning of, like, November, so...
You broke Phoenix.
Yeah.
You're muted.
Yeah.
I can't. I literally can't even.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, why would you buy any of this shit? I bet...
Why do you need a pet feeder or water that is connected and fucking internet facing? This, you know what Kashmir has, folks? We are so fucking abusive to our cat. Oh my God. He has a metal bowl. Excuse me, two metal bowls in a metal stand that sits inside of a small tote. So in case he makes a mess as he does, it doesn't get all over my floor. One of those metal bowls has food in it. You know what the other one has? Oh my God, it has water in it. You know what he does? He walks over, he eats out of the food dish, and then he walks over and he drinks out of the water dish. And you know what? I don't have to worry about it being hacked by the internet.
Exactly. And, you know, he gets fresh filtered water out of the fridge twice a day, you know. Anyway. Okay. Let's talk about another Darwin Award winner here. New York's incoming mayor bans Raspberry Pi at his inauguration party.
Yes, I also have security flaws.
So New York's mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani has invited the city's residents to join him at a block party to celebrate his inauguration. They probably won't. But told attendees not to bring a Raspberry Pi single-board computer to the event. Now, the Pi appears on the prohibited items list, along with explosives, weapons, drones, laser pointers, and the Flipper Zero, which maker community Adafruit first reported this list. So the Register has previously described perceptions of the Flipper Zero as swinging between a fun little tool to help you learn about all the radio signals surrounding you or a potential weapon for hoodie-wearing criminals seeking to take over your electronic life. Yeah, you got a live in-person demonstration of one of these things.
I was frightened and fascinated by this little sumbitch.
Yes.
And the fact you can buy this bastard on Amazon bothers me even worse.
Yeah. The battery-powered device includes multiple radios and allows users to develop apps that put them to work. Flipper Zero also includes an RFID module that the device makers suggest could come in handy for cloning access cards, and an NFC module capable of emulating electronic tags. There's obvious potential for miscreants to use a Flipper Zero to make mischief at large events, perhaps by cloning ID cards to gain access to secure areas or by messing with wireless communications. Now, a Raspberry Pi could do all of that and more, but the single board devices aren't as neatly packaged as the Flipper Zero and therefore be more conspicuous. Now, Adafruit laments that listing the Raspberry Pi as a forbidden item besmirches a brand beloved by educators and artists, and also points out that banning the single board machine is futile given that miscreants could program a smartphone to perform evil deeds at the inauguration. Shit, Sherlock.
All right, I'm going to be the tech tard for just a moment here. I'm going to step back into my former role. Unless you have nefarious intentions, why do you need to bring a pie, a flipper, or anything else with you to the inauguration? I'm not supporting this prick. But I kind of get it. Unless you have malicious intent, you don't need that fucking technology at an inauguration.
Yeah, but I think the point is that I could bring things that look a whole lot less nefarious or that are more common, like a smartphone, and I could do things with something along those sides. So
no, I completely understand that. But what I'm saying is I find it completely ridiculous that he found it necessary to actually... Here's the thing. If someone's caught bringing one of these in, you're just automatically ejected. Get the fuck out. Because you know no good can come of this. You have no good reason to have this on you. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And Sir Bemrose actually put a fantastic link in the chat as well, saying that this man during his inauguration speech said, quote, "We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism." That should scare the shit freedom-loving American.
Yeah, well, just say they've been living this reality in Seattle for a while. So,
I understand that.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's get out of politics and we're getting into a different brand of politics. So as we go to the junk drawer.
I still disagree with what Sir Bemrose said, though. It's not about the burden of proof being wrong. A good reason to ban it? Why do you need it there? I'll argue the other side of that until I'm blue in my face. Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you need to bring a Raspberry Pi or a Flipper Zero to an inauguration unless you have nefarious intent? It does not make it make sense to me, phone boy. You're 30 years in the cybersecurity industry. Make it make sense to me how bringing one of these things to an inauguration is should not be a red flag and you be kicked out or banned. No good can come of this. There's no platonic use of these things at an inauguration unless you're working AV.
Well, I don't know. And I'm not going to, and like I said, I don't know how I feel about it. And honestly, like it's one of those things that's like, I'm not there. I can't do anything about it. I'm not worried about it. So I just, this is where I just kind of go, okay, yeah, whether it should be or not, that's over there. That's why I don't have an opinion about it, because it's like, it's over there, you know? It's not something that I have to deal with, so, and I'm not going to, and I'm certainly, you know, myself, I'm not going to show up to one of the, I wouldn't show up to the damn thing to begin with. That's the choice that you really should make, because this guy's clearly
gonna... I mean, that is probably like the first logical step before we even talk about the other things.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the junk drawer, shall we?
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Yeah, well, I think the one thing I will say, yeah, I mean, truly with it, with, you know, there's, we covered this story on 2.5 Bins, and we did want to dive into it, a little bit of philosophy about it, but it is,
And I will talk about our king, our priest, our feudal lord, how AI is taking us back to the dark ages.
Turns out I have no brain.
So we covered this story on 2.5 Bins, but we wanted to dive into the philosophy behind the article. The German philosopher Immanuel Kant famously defined the Enlightenment as man's emergence from his self-imposed immaturity. Immaturity, he wrote, is the inability to use one's understanding without guidance from another. For centuries, that other, directing human thought and life, was often the priest, the monarch, or the feudal lord, the ones claiming to act as God's voice on earth. In trying to understand natural phenomena, why volcanoes erupt, why the seasons change, humans looked to God for answers. In shaping the social world, from economics to love, religion served as our guide. That's why the world's so fucked up. So humans, Kant argued, always had the capacity for reason. They just hadn't always had the confidence to use it. But with the American and later the French Revolution, a new era was dawning. Reason would replace faith, and the human mind, unshackled from authority, would become the engine of progress and a more mortal world. Sapere aud, or have courage to use your own understanding, Kant urged his contemporaries.
So I want to point something out, because Kant was one of the philosophers that you had in your philosophy class. None of this was covered in this, by the way.
No, not at all. Spoke not one word about this particular point of Kant's philosophy.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm trying to remember back to, because I took philosophy when I was at White Privilege University, and it was, of course, it was 30 something years ago at this point. I don't think this came up in that either. And we actually did a little bit more direct reading of Kant, I think, back in the day. But this idea that, yeah, humans, the way that this is kind of described, I'm kind of looking at this as like, okay, even philosophy is like sort of gearing people toward this, you know, this idea that it's all about reason and there's no room for faith anywhere. And I just found that really interesting, which is why I wanted to stop things for a second there.
No, you're fine. Now, 2.5 centuries later, one may wonder whether we're quietly slipping back into immaturity. An app telling us which road to take is one thing, but artificial intelligence threatens to come or to become our new other, a silent authority that guides our thoughts and actions. We are in danger of ceding the hard-won courage to think for ourselves, and this time, not to gods or kings, but to code. ChatGPT was launched only 3 years ago, and already one global survey published in April found that 82% of respondents had used AI in the previous 6 months. Whether deciding to end a relationship or who to vote for, people are turning to machines for advice. According to OpenAI, 73% of users' prompts concern non-work-related topics. Even more intriguing, then our dependence on AI's judgment in daily life is what happens when we let it speak for us. Writing is now among the most common uses of ChatGPT, second only to practical requests such as DIY or cooking advice. The American author Joan Didion once said, "I write entirely to find out what I am thinking." What happens when we stop writing? Do we stop finding out? Worryingly, some evidence suggests that the answer might be yes. A study by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, used electroencephalography to monitor the brain activity of essay writers given access to AI, search engines like Google, or nothing at all. Those who could rely on AI showed the lowest cognitive activity and struggled to accurately quote their work. Perhaps most concerning was that over a couple of months, participants in the AI group became increasingly lazy, copying entire blocks of text into their essays. The study is small and imperfect, but Kant would have recognized the pattern. Laziness and cowardice, he wrote, are the reasons why so great a proportion of men remain in lifelong immaturity and why it's so easy for others to establish themselves as their guardians. It's so easy to be immature.
Yeah, yeah, you want to talk about the system setting you up for setting you up to be subservient. Oh, there you go.
Oh, 100%.
Yes.
Okay. AI is a black box. It produces knowledge, but without necessarily deepening human understanding. We don't really know how AI reaches its conclusions. Even the programmers admit as much. Nor can we verify its reasoning against clear objective criteria. It's because AI can't reason. And anyone who fucking says that it can, you should walk away from swiftly because they're a fucking idiot. So when we follow AI's advice, we're not guided by reason. We are back in the realm of faith. In dubio pro machina. When in doubt, trust the machine. That may become our future guiding principle. Like hell.
No.
Not here. Not at the Lotus Effect. Not ever.
No.
There's a reason I have consistently been saying, every time you use AI, you are giving away a piece of your autonomy. And this exact article highlights that.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, yeah, and I think that, and I've always been, you know, one of my favorite songs by Rush is Free Will, right? And I will choose a path that's clear. We'll choose free will. But, I've always been, as a guiding principle myself, I've always been about, body autonomy and free will and making choices as to what you get to, what you get to consume in your body. And unfortunately, all the good choices have been taken away. over the course of decades and centuries that the choices are whittled down to the stuff that ultimately is trying to kill you. Yeah. So and they're trying to take away thought by making us interact and taking us away from, they're making us trust something that's outside of us. And no, that doesn't work, folks. We trusted them for, however long. How well did that go, folks? Well, we already know that. So. Meanwhile, this is one of these stories that I found out about it in a meme, but then I saw a story related to it and it's funny. I had to cover it. Washington State Attorney General warns citizen journalists to stop investigating Somali daycares or face potential hate crime charges.
This is America, you dumb son of a bitch, okay?
Yeah, the Washington State Attorney General released a statement on X Tuesday evening warning independent journalists to stop investigating fraudulent Somali daycare centers or they could be charged with a hate crime. My office has received outreach from members of the Somali community after reports of home-based daycare providers being harassed and accused of fraud were little or no fact-checking, according to the State Attorney General Nick Brown. Harmeet Dhillon, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, issued a warning of her own in reaction to the Washington State Attorney General's post. Any state official who chills or threatens to chill a journalist's First Amendment rights will have some explaining to do, she wrote on X. Wednesday morning. The DOJ Civil Rights Division takes potential violations of 18 U.S.C. paragraph 242 seriously, Dillian added. Now, this statute, known as the Deprivation of Rights Under Color Law, make it a crime for any person acting under the pretense of law to willfully deprive another individual of rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution or laws of the United States. The clash of attorney generals came after YouTuber Nick Shirley exposed about a dozen Somali-owned, state-funded child care facilities in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that appeared to be completely deserted. Shirley produced a 42-minute video, which has been viewed over 131 million times on X since it was posted on December 26, alleging that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz knew about the fraud but never reported it. Probably was benefiting from it in some way. Inspired by Shirley's bombshell report, citizen journalists in multiple states with large Somali populations have launched their own investigations in recent days. In the Kent, Washington area Tuesday, YouTuber Crisp Sims, a self-described gonzo journalist, visited seven suspicious Somali childcare sites and reported that they were very unhappy to see him. Sims posted a video of him approaching a private home listed as a childcare facility that appeared not to be as advertised. "There was no sign of kids or being a daycare facility," Sims wrote. "I was told by a few they weren't daycares despite receiving taxpayer dollars. One yelled, 'Call the police,' behind the door." On Monday, independent journalists Jonathan Cho and Cam Higby visited an alleged Somali daycare facility in Seattle that receives hundreds of thousands in taxpayer funds, and the person who answered the door said there was no daycare there in the past or present. Higby said, "Dagash Childcare has received over $210,000 just this year alone." Another listed childcare facility, a house in a residential neighborhood in Kent, Washington, has received over $863,000 since 2023, according to Higby. "Residents say there is no daycare here," the journalist said. Another reporter reporting on potential fraud in the Rainier Vista neighborhood of Seattle on December 29th faced hostile reactions from the Somali residents who called the police on him. In his statement, the Washington State Attorney General encouraged members of the Somali community experiencing threats or harassment to call the police or his office hate crimes and bias incident hotline or report it to the state's hate crime website. Now, addressing the independent journalist, Brown added, "If you think fraud is happening, there are appropriate measures to report and investigate. Go to DCYF's website to learn more, and where fraud is substantiated and verified by law enforcement and regulatory agencies, people should be held accountable." Shut up, slave, is the clip I should play here after that, because basically, yeah, go pound sand. We're not actually going to do anything about it because we're all in on the scam. The post-millennials Andy Ngo responded to Brown's threat on X, saying, "It is the duty of journalists to visit taxpayer-funded nonprofits and businesses to investigate where you have failed. The journalists have documented their visits on camera, and there is no harassing or threatening behavior. You are trying to threaten journalists by telling people to call police with false allegations of a hate crime." Yeah.
How is it a fucking hate crime to say, "Hey, you're running an illegal fucking operation. You're pretending to be a daycare when you're clearly not, and you're getting hundreds of thousands in funding from the government"? How's that a fucking hate crime?
Well, apparently calling somebody on their bullshit is a hate crime. That's what the real...
Oh, that's what it is. Actually pointing out that you're being a cunt and doing something fucked up, yeah, that's a hate crime. Okay, well, guess what? Then everybody can hate me for pointing out the shit we point out on this show when they already do.
Yes, it's a hate crime if the fragile woke bureaucrat says it is.
I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah, well, considering the part of the world it is, yeah, I think that's probably it. Well... All right, well, I think it's time for the last call, is it not?
I think it might be.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
Well, we don't have any more calls, so we do have one last call story, and I couldn't resist this one. Yeah. I'm just,
this is the second time we've theoretically seen this come up. Different location, same shenanigans, and we love it because hackers replaced Silicon Valley crosswalk messages with Elon Musk's voice after exposing weak password, according to a report.
Oh, Elon!
Access granted.
This, the thrill of pwning a system. This is the greatest rush. Got access. The feeling never gets old.
Investigations revealed that the Caltrans system was hacked because the company didn't change the password on the crosswalk system, despite being advised to by the manufacturers. This sounds like a like a, fuck, what is that thing? Phone boy, come on, fuck, don't stare at your screen looking stupid. You know the fucking word, come on. The computer fucking thing that every, router.
Yeah, router, yes.
Fuck me, I couldn't come up with the word.
Yeah, change.
Fuck, yeah, like nobody changes their router. People don't even know. Oh, I have to change the password on my router? Yeah, Magellan, because it's a standard password that the company uses for, oh, I don't know, every router they produce. So it's easy to look it up and know what it is.
Or it's something that's easy to guess if it's like based on a serial number or something like that, right? So that's, they want you to change it. Now,
that's the whole point here is this big Caltrans system made the most basic of cybersecurity error by not changing the password.
Yeah.
Now, the headline mentioned Elon, but the example we'll give is better. Hi, this is Mark Zuckerberg, but real ones call me the Zuck, one crosswalk message said. The voice then added, you know, it's normal to feel uncomfortable or even violated as we forcefully insert AI into every facet of your conscious experience. And I just want to assure you, you don't need to worry because there's absolutely nothing you can do to stop it. Anyway, see ya.
Oh, there's things
I
love that. Yes,
I
had to pull that in when I was pulling that story. And honestly, like, yeah, you can stop it. You can withdraw consent. You can opt out, right? I mean, that's, you know, as much as you can, right? Is like, look, I'm not getting involved in any of these systems that have AI. I'm doing, you know, we're doing the things that we can do, you know, within our sphere of control, the decisions we make, right, with it, to use things that we, you know, support the things that actually work the way we want them to, all of that, right? That's all we're doing here, right? And yeah, and we don't, so if you don't want to have force AI, yeah, the way you don't force AI into every experience is don't use Facebook products. Anyway, well, I think we somehow have gotten to the end of the show, honey. Did we somehow get here? I think we actually managed to.
I think we might have actually pulled it off. I'm not really sure, but...
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
We gotta go. Even though we've had a great goddamn time.
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.